Jeremiah and the last five kings of the temple.
We are living in a time of great transition, world transition. Doesn't matter what aspect you look at. Politically, we look back all the way back to the start of the different world wars, the different kinds of governments that have taken place and replaced the old monarchies. We now see the doctrines even of democracy showing their vulnerabilities. We have things like terrorism on the social front. There have been changes and transitions in the role of women. We see things as the world is struggling with same-sex marriages. On the scientific side, they talk about things like quantum physics. Everything's being turned upside down. Communication, internet, cell phones, the world is just spinning. In economics, we see what's going on. Just the last, 2-3 weeks? Upheaval. Doctrines that have been held sacred, a free enterprise, are being exposed for the greed and their excesses. And you know, there's more to come. There's more giants to be exposed for their greed and their excesses. But everything is changing, and people are like holding on for dear life. And one of the realities is that any kind of change is a great stress. Stress is shaking, and stress is threatening to destroy the very fabric of our lives, what we know to be society. So how do we relate to this, these times of transition? We know that one age is ending. The gospel age is coming to an end, and a new age is beginning. This is the greatest change that the earth has ever experienced. How do we behave? How do we deal with this stress? The church, the temple class, is coming to a close. It's part of this process, part of the events of this time period. The 144,000 will be completed. Over 2,500 years ago, a similar thing was taking place. And we see an interesting parallel in the days of Jeremiah. One age was ending. That was this age of Israel's exclusive position with Jehovah. Amos 3:2, "You only have I known of all the families of the earth." And that great image of Nebuchadnezzar, recorded in Daniel, the second chapter, that great image was coming to life. And God was now going to deal with and through Gentile nations. So our consideration today has to do with that time period when that era was ending, just like ours is ending now. And my hope is that we can see in the time period of Jeremiah and the last five kings, we can see parallels, that there can be lessons. And my premise kind of is what happened to Jeremiah as a select man of God is going to happen to you as select people of God. Now, regarding the kings, I've always had a problem, I'll confess to you, remembering their names. I can't keep them straight. It reminds me of a story I heard. It was about a Southern University football team. And the story goes like this, that The only reason for the school's existence was to have this football team. And the only way that the football players could pass academically was to take this one course, and it was called the History of the Old Testament. And the reason that they could take and pass this course was because the professor always gave the same exam every year. And the exam was one question, and this was the question. Name the 10 kings of ancient Israel. So the young men would memorize the 10 kings of ancient Israel. They'd go in, pass the test, and go play football. Well, guess what? One year, the professor changed the question. And this year he asked them, name the major and the minor prophets of the Old Testament. Oh, they sat there. They just didn't know what to do. There was only one young man who passed the test. And this is how he answered the question. He said, "Far be it from me to distinguish between the major and the minor prophets of the Lord. But the 10 kings of ancient Israel were..." So I kind of related to those poor boys that couldn't remember much, because I can't remember those names very well. So as I looked at this, as you would guess, the last five kings were related. And as I was trying to figure it out, I'd get so confused with, I'd use up all my memory with their names, and I couldn't figure out the rest of the story. So I decided to number them. I said, I'm not going to deal with their names. The last king is going to be the last king number one, and then the one before him is going to be number two, number three, number four, number five. I'm going to see if I can straighten this out in my brain. So that's what I did. So you're going to hear me refer to number three and number four and number five. It turns out that they're all related. And you remember that in the days of after Solomon died, in the early history of the kingdom, the nation split into two parts. There were the two-tribe kingdom of Judah, and they kind of were central and south, and then there were the other 10 tribes were in the north, and they were called Israel. So at this point in time, the nation of the Israel, the 10 tribes, had already been taken into captivity, basically by the Assyrians. And that had happened at least 75 years before this time period started. So what we're left with is really the two-tribe nation of Judah. We call it Israel. This is really the Judah part. And this is the time period that we usually think of around 606 BC and that era. These last five kings were all related. Not exactly what you'd think of a father, son, and then a son and a son. There was actually one father who was the fifth from the last kings, and then three of his sons followed him and then inserted was one grandson. So it went like this. When the father died, they actually put his second son in his place. So the father was the fifth son. Then came the second son. Then when the second son was removed, they went back to the first son. It's pretty complicated, isn't it? You can see if you add the names in, it really gets unintelligible. Then when the first son is removed, they take his son, who's the grandson of the original father. Then when the grandson is removed, they take the third son of the original father. And that third son becomes the last king. So those are in sequence. That's the scheme of the last five. Now this fifth king, from the end, so to speak, is Josiah. He's the father of the three sons and then one of his grandsons. Josiah begins his reign at the age of 8. Now, I can remember when I was 8 years old. There's a few of you here who can remember when I was 8 years old. Can imagine what kind of king I would have made at the age of 8. The national diet would have been ice cream and chocolate chip cookies. That's the judgment of an 8-year-old. But apparently this young man was blessed of God, and he must have had some good advisors. And by the time he's 16, the scriptures say he begins to seek God. And by the time he's 20, he starts to take action against the idolatry of Israel. Let's look at some of the scriptures. And this is recorded in 2 Chronicles 34. In the 8th year of his reign, the first point is that he becomes king at the age of 8. Now in the 8th year, so now he's 16 years old, he began to seek the God of his father David. Now you have to skip all the kings in between because they were so bad. His grandfather was King Manasseh. He was a good king. But, no, I'm sorry, his grandfather was Hezekiah. Hezekiah was a good king. Almost all the rest were evil men. In the 12th year of Josiah, he's now 20 years old, he begins to purge Judah and Jerusalem of the idolatry and the cast images. And it says in verse 4 that under his direction, the altars of Baal were torn down, and the idols and the images were destroyed. Now let's jump to Jeremiah. And the account says in 1 Jeremiah that the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah in the 13th year of the reign of Josiah. So this makes Josiah now still a young man. He's about 21 years old. Now, how old is Jeremiah? Well, the scriptures don't exactly say. But we see here from verse 6 that Jeremiah's response to Jehovah when he is called as a prophet, Jeremiah says, I don't know how to talk. I don't know how to speak. I'm but a child. Now, what does Jeremiah mean here? Well, I doubt if he's 12 years old or 8 years old, or Jehovah would not have called him as a prophet to go out and speak to the people. Jeremiah may have thought that because he wasn't 30 years old, which the Jews tend to look at as an adult man, that he must have been younger than 30. And you know what my guess is? My guess is that he's about Josiah's age. Josiah was 21 when this happened, and I would say plus or minus a couple years. I bet you Jeremiah was 21 also. So, we have two young men, Josiah and Jeremiah, about the same age, both God-fearing men. And how unusual this was in that time period, in that society. The society was filled with idolatry and all kinds of heathen behavior and immorality, and there were these two young men who stood out in the crowd. And it must have been quite something to see, where Jeremiah was out there preaching to the people what Jehovah was telling him, and Josiah was in the government trying to change things organizationally, removing the idols and things like that out of the country. And together, these two men worked for Jehovah, and it must have been a joy for Jehovah to see that. Now something happens though when Josiah is 39 years old. This is like they had 18 good years together, and then Josiah does something that is rather irrational. I'm tempted to blame Brother Goodman here. He helped me with my slides here, and now I can't find where I'm at. Okay. All right, here we go. In 2 Chronicles, it said that after all this 18 years of good work with Josiah and Jeremiah, when Josiah had the temple set in order, Necho, the king of Egypt, went up to fight the Babylonians on the Euphrates. And Josiah marched out to meet him in battle. Now let me just explain this a little bit. Necho is coming from the south. He's going to fight the Babylonians way up north. He's cutting through Israel. Now, this is a big army from Egypt, going to fight a big army. It's like a big bully wants to cut across your front lawn to go fight another bully. And King Josiah goes out and says, "Hey, wait a minute, you can't cut across my grass. Are you crazy? You let the bully go with all his friends." So Josiah goes out to meet him in battle. And Necho sees him coming, and he sends out messengers, and he says, "Why are you fighting with me? Why are you doing this?" And he says, "I don't have a quarrel with you." And here's an interesting thing. Here this Pharaoh from Egypt says, God, you see, God is starting to deal already with other nations. God has told me to hurry, so stop opposing God, who is with me. Josiah doesn't listen to him, continues the battle, and Josiah, because of his own foolishness, is killed in that battle. So the people then take his second son, and they make him king. Josiah had reigned for 31 years, the age of 8, the age of 39. And they put Jehu, Ahaz, the fourth king, in his place. This is the second son. Well, 3 months later, that Pharaoh who went by up, going up north to fight the battle, he comes back. He doesn't like the fact that they put Jehu, Ahaz in there. And he arrests this new, brand new king, who incidentally is like 20 years old or something like that. And he replaces him with his brother, with his older brother. And he takes the younger brother as a prisoner back to Egypt. So now we're the third king away. And you know how long that second king lasted? 3 months. And then the Pharaoh went up, came down, removed him, and puts Jehoiakim, another son, in his place. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 11 years, and he did evil in the eyes of the Lord his God. It's like overnight. Here there was this good reign of Josiah for all those years. What did we say? 39 years, and overnight, one of his sons comes in, and he's an evil man. Now, Jeremiah continued to preach, but this was now against much opposition. As a matter of fact, it was really pretty vicious persecution. And it was so bad that the Lord prompted Jeremiah to make this prediction. And this is actually the first, this is the prediction of the demise of this kingdom of Israel, Judah. From the north, disaster will be poured out upon all who live in the land. Well, from the north, you know who that means? Babylon. He's saying that from the north, there's going to be, so he's predicting that invasion that eventually takes place that wipes out the nation. And it, we see in verse 6 that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, eventually comes and attacks him. This is the third from the last king. This is the first invasion. And he arrests him and takes him in shackles to Babylon. Now there's another invasion to follow. So keep in mind two invasions. Reviewing, Jehoiakim is the oldest son of Josiah, reigns 11 years. These are bad times for Jeremiah. Jeremiah predicts the demise, the invasion of Babylon, the downfall of the nation. The invasion does happen just as he prophesies. King number 3 is taken to Babylon, and now he's replaced by his son, Jehoiachin. And it's kind of easy to remember the father and son. They both have the same kind of name, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin. They're related. That's a father and a son. So his father lasted 11 years, and now Jehoiachin comes in. Jehoiachin was 18 years old. That's not a whole lot better than being 8. It may be worse, because maybe you're more arrogant. And he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months and 10 days. And he did such a bad job, he was so evil. It says in there, the ninth verse, he did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He must have also done evil in the eyes of the Babylonians, because Nebuchadnezzar told his soldiers, remove the man, get rid of him. And in the spring, King Nebuchadnezzar sent for him and brought him to Babylon together with articles of value from the temple of the Lord. But here's something interesting that took place at this particular time. Not only did they take the articles of value from the temple, this is the first time they kind of raised the, as far as stole things from the temple, but they also took, along with this young king, this 18-year-old, they took his mother, they took the court officials, the leaders of Judah and Jerusalem, the craftsmen and the artisans. And Ezekiel 17, in describing this, says they took the mighty of the land. And also in Ezekiel the 17th there, in 12 to 14, he carried away, the NIV says, the leading men of the land. And he made, and do you know who went in this group? This is when they took men like Daniel and the three young Hebrew men. They took the best of what was there. And when they replaced this 18-year-old, they replaced him with Zedekiah, the third son of Josiah. And now Zedekiah is the last king of Judah. Now by the time we come to Zedekiah, we've got 31 years, which makes Jeremiah about 40. Then we've got the third king. Jeremiah is about 52. And we're now, so Jeremiah is in his 50s now. And Zedekiah becomes the last king. But what does Zedekiah do? He also rebels against Nebuchadnezzar. And this is interesting because it says here in Chronicles 36:13, that Nebuchadnezzar made Zedekiah swear that he would behave himself. Take an oath. And Nebuchadnezzar doesn't ask Zedekiah to swear according to his Babylonian gods. He said, no, you swear an oath to me in the name of your God, Jehovah. So Zedekiah makes this oath in the name of Jehovah, and he doesn't keep any part of the oath at all. And it says in 2 Chronicles 36, the Lord, the God of their father, sent word to them through his messengers again and again, because he had pity on his people and on his dwelling place, the temple in Jerusalem. Verse 17, he brought up against them the king of Babylon. This is now the second invasion. Nebuchadnezzar comes back the second time, and this is when Nebuchadnezzar destroys Jerusalem. So you see the period of transition. One age was ending. God's dealing with Israel was coming to an end. They were going into captivity. And we have at this point the destruction of the temple. The Holy Land is in shambles. There's just not much left at all. So let's jump now to the record of Jeremiah. First chapter, verse 5, before I formed you in the womb, Jehovah is speaking, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. You know, there's only a few people in all of biblical history that Jehovah says he knew before they were born. He knew Isaac. He knew Samson. He knew Samuel. He knew John the Baptist. He knew Jesus. He knew Paul. And he knew Jeremiah. It's a short list. And of course, we see the response of Jeremiah. He says, I don't know how to speak. I'm only a child. Verse 7, the Lord responds to him, don't say I'm only a child. You must go to everyone I send you and say whatever I command you. I think that one of the compliments to Jeremiah comes later in the life of Jesus. Here, Jesus, greatest man to ever walk the face of the earth, does miracles, can walk on water, all kinds of things. And you know what some people thought? They were trying to figure out who Jesus was. Some of them said, maybe it's Jeremiah come back to life. That's how great Jeremiah was in the mind of the Jews and in Jewish history. Jeremiah had to say some pretty tough things to these people. One of the things that upset Jehovah the most was that they burned their children. Imagine God's chosen people burning their children as offering to God. Can you stray any further from the image of and the likeness of Jehovah than to burn people for him? It's quite a leaving of the path. And what happened? So Jeremiah tells them that they're doing bad things, and their response to Jeremiah is, you must die. His own family betrayed him. And that reminds us of Jesus' experience and how his family did not like him. So what kind of life did Jeremiah have after his friend Josiah died? It was pretty rough. He said, I never sat in the company of revelers. I never made merry with them. I sat alone because God's hand was on me. It was a lonely life. One of his friends, I don't know if a friend might be too strong a word, one of his associates and secretary was Baruch. And Baruch recorded what Jeremiah said. And he got into trouble himself, but Jehovah hid them. And they tried to arrest Baruch and Jeremiah, But it says there in the account in Jeremiah 36:26, the Lord had hidden them. They put Jeremiah in prison. And as I go through these things, remember the premise that what happened to Jeremiah in the last days may happen to you. They put him in dungeons, and when the king talked to him, this is Zedekiah, is the king now, and he says, what's going to happen here? Is there any word from the Lord? Jeremiah says, yes, you're going to be handed over to the king of Babylon. It's not a popular message. King Zedekiah then gave orders for Jeremiah to be placed in the courtyard of the guard so that he would have some semblance of peace. But some other men came, took Jeremiah, put him in a cistern. That was the cistern, had no water in it, only mud, and Jeremiah sank down into the mud. Sad days for a man who's now well into his 60s. Now Jeremiah says something that when Zedekiah asks him what's going to happen, Jeremiah tells him that God wants him to surrender to the Babylonians. God does not want Israel fighting the Babylonians. That's kind of interesting because, you know, Bible students today, we want to see Israel fight all the time. It's as if we expect Israel to fight and win a battle and beat the Palestinians and the Arabs and all that. And I thought the story was that Israel has to be taken down to some low level and then God will fight for them. So sometimes we get a little confused in our desire to see Israel fight and Israel succeed and Israel be victorious. And here, in the days of Zedekiah, Jehovah said, I want you to surrender to Babylon. And if you surrender, it says here in verse 17 of chapter 38, the city will not be burned. The temple will not be destroyed. But that's not what happened. Zedekiah fought. So in the ninth year of Zedekiah, in the tenth month, Nebuchadnezzar comes again. This is the second invasion again. We told the story earlier. There's a year and a half siege of Jerusalem. This was bad. This was as bad as it gets. This is the time where the historians tell us that the starvation was so bad, the Jews ate their own children. That's what the chosen people had come down to. And so the invasion took place. They slaughtered the Jews and they burnt the temple. That was Solomon's temple. And they put out, they killed Zedekiah's sons, they put out his eyes, and they arrested him and took him to Babylon. Now in this whole story, which I'll just mention, the Babylonians had heard of Jeremiah. And Nebuchadnezzar told the commander of the army, make sure that Jeremiah is not injured. And so the commander comes to Jeremiah and asks him what he'd like to do. And he says that he'll take care of him. He says, come with me to Babylon. He says, if you like, and I will look after you. This is the chief general of Nebuchadnezzar. He says, but if you don't want to come, then don't come. This is Jeremiah 40, verse 4. He says, you can live anywhere you want here in this country. So let's look at some lessons here from Jeremiah. What a blessing it was that Jehovah knew that Jeremiah was going to be his prophet. And I think to some degree, not coming close to the concept of predestination. It's more of a foreknowledge. To some degree, Jehovah knew about you. And he knew what your life was going to be. And whether you started young or started late, Jehovah has been watching your life too. Jeremiah was humble in the beginning, and he was humble to the end. We have seen examples of other men of God who started humble, Moses, but then they lost it. Not Jeremiah. Not you. You have to start humble. You have to end humble. You have to keep yourself humble. If you don't keep yourself humble, God will give you experiences to make you humble. Jeremiah was incredibly active. He wrote Jeremiah. He wrote Lamentations. Jewish tradition says he wrote 1st and 2nd Kings. That's like 1/6 of the Old Testament. Not only was he out there preaching, but he was there dictating to his scribe, Baruch. Jeremiah was not popular with the priesthood. He was removed from the temple. He was not allowed to go into the temple. And you know what? If you're popular with any kind of a religious establishment, there's something wrong. Because there's something wrong with all of them. So, take a lesson from Jeremiah. Don't try to be popular. He was not allowed in the temple. That meant the organized religion. You won't be allowed in the organized religion. Jeremiah delivered an unpopular message. That's what you have to do. Again, if your message is just too politically correct, you're not giving the real message. I found this interesting. Even though the 10 tribes had been destroyed like 100 years before, carried off to captivity, Jeremiah never lost the message to the 10 tribes. Those are the ones that are lost, scattered, unknown. Jeremiah kept up preaching to the lost tribes also. Jeremiah ended up in prison. If you don't go into a physical prison, you might go into some other kind of prison where you can't do the work that you could before. But if you're living the life of Jeremiah, you're going to end up in prison. Jeremiah was frequently discouraged. We see it in his writings. He said some famous things like, "The summer is ended. The harvest is past, and we are not saved." It sounds a little discouraged there. But he always bounced back. And he never stopped being active. He never stopped doing what he was supposed to do. Reminds me of 2 Corinthians 4. "We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed sometimes, but not in despair. Persecuted, but we know we're not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed." I liked very much that he refused the good life in Babylon. He was 70-some years old. The general said to him, "Come with me to Babylon. I'll take care of you." What an offer! You know, he could have gone there. He could have communed with Daniel. He could have had fellowship with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The life in Babylon would have been a good life for him. Not Jeremiah. He says, "I am staying in the Holy Land." That's sweet. Jeremiah had very few friends, if any. If he had any at all. That may happen to you. Because of your stand for truth, because of your life of truth, you don't even have to say anything. Jesus said that. You don't have to say anything. They will persecute you because of your life. An interesting aside, Ernie, am I over now? I'm over. Okay. Keep in mind, where did Josiah die? Josiah, remember, is the fifth from the last king. Josiah died on the battlefield of Armageddon. Oh, I always thought Armageddon was the last step. Not according to this picture of Jeremiah. There's four more kings after the battle of Armageddon. The temple is not destroyed until Zedekiah. Armageddon takes place, the battle of Armageddon takes place in Josiah. There's added up. There's 22, 23 years after the battle of Armageddon before the temple class is completed. But you know, I never talk about chronology, so just kind of put that in the back of your head. When the temple's destroyed in Jeremiah's day, as it will soon be destroyed in this day, it means the church is gone, it's complete, the great gospel age is finished. That's what we're coming up against. That's what the life of Jeremiah led to. So I hope you can extract some lessons from this great man of God, one of the most outstanding men of the Old Testament, Jeremiah. He worked hard, and that's my encouragement to you.